Okay, this is Friday morning, November 18th, and I'm Bill Jones, and I'm interviewing Adele Johnson. And Adele, I think what we'd like to hear first from you is just a brief sketch of your life so that we have some basic biographical details to start with.
Okay, well, then I was born in Castleton, North Dakota, lived all over North Dakota, really, and wound up eventually in Fargo, where I went to high school, and we lived there while I was in college as well. I graduated from Morehead State with, at that time it was a Bachelor of Education degree.
That's all they offered, I think, at that
point. Yeah, mm-hmm. And taught for a year in Akeley, Minnesota, and then moved to Battle Lake, and was back in Fargo teaching, first privately and then at Concordia Conservatory, and then I taught at Morehead State. And then we lived in Colorado after we were married, and came back to Minnesota. Not that we wanted to especially, but we had a child with a dust allergy who couldn't stand living there, mm-hmm. and lived in Morehead for around Morehead for almost 30 years then, and after we retired, moved down to Otter Tail County, live on a Lake Lida there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's talk about your first teaching in a high school situation. You taught music then?
No, I taught English.
Oh, you taught English.
Mm-hmm.
So your bachelor's degree was it a general degree or a degree?
Well, I had two majors, English and French.
English and French.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this music preparation was kind of on the side,
an
extra.
Mm-hmm. I had some very excellent teachers. Mm-hmm. Esther Temple from Fargo, I don't know if you know that name.
No.
In high school. And then there was a teacher called Bertha Hagen who divided her time between Fargo and New York City. And when she was in Fargo, I worked with her.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the University of Michigan, worked with Joe Brinkman. But it was always aside from whatever I was doing academically.
I see. And so those that, both Akeley and Battle Lake, you were teaching English.
Right. Mm.
Yeah. Do you remember the curricula that you followed?
Yeah, it was state prescribed at the time.
Okay.
Yeah, so much time to this, you know, like drama, so much time to grammar and so much time to spelling,
mm-hmm.
and so
mm-hmm.
on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. And you taught the whole range of high school.
Right, everything.
Yeah, yeah. And then you moved to the big city, or back to the big city.
Right.
Yeah? But then you began to teach privately in
piano.
Give private lessons in piano.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And how much did you charge for a lesson in those times?
I can't really remember. It wasn't much to start with, probably a dollar and a half. By the time I quit, I was getting $10 a lesson.
Uh-huh. And your students were largely children, or
to start right? with, but mm-hmm. You know, once I moved to Concordia and MS, it was college-age students.
Mm-hmm. And now the Concordia Conservatory, we haven't—I don't believe we've interviewed anybody who's had a relationship with that conservatory. I think that might be worth exploring a little bit. How did that operate? Were you formally a member of the Concordia College faculty, Could students gain credit from their study with a member of the Concordia Conservatory faculty?
Well, yes, some of them did at any rate. I don't know if that was true of the whole staff. But.
I see. Now, they had studios other than on the campus, too.
Right, it was in Fargo over the DeVoe Music Company, what's now Schmitz. That's where the conservatory was, but there were also conservatory studios available on campus once the Knudsen Center was built.
Oh, yeah. And then at Morehead State, you taught piano there, too.
Right.
That's right. And then you did, how about performing? Were you active in that?
Oh, very.
As a soloist, as a
both,
an accompanist,
was, you know, for quite a period, I was the only one in town, so
who really played?
Yeah.
So if anybody needed an accompanist,
right,
or anything, they called you. Yeah. Did you make that a professional thing? That is, did you get paid? Or
yes.
Yes. Okay. And what could an accompanist expect to be paid?
I don't even remember. Not a lot.
Yeah, yeah. But that was a part of your professional career. You were earning your living teaching and playing, which is not an easy thing to do.
No, no.
Yeah. It wasn't then either, I'm sure.
No.
Yeah, it isn't now, that's for sure. And did you, do you remember some of the people that you accompanied?
Well, locally, I played with Sig Thompson, and we did lots of chamber music, various combinations. Whoever was heading the violin department at Concordia,
I remember Thomas Hibbard, for example.
Right, Tom. Tom and I did several recitals together. And Bert McGarity from
Morehead State.
Morehead State and I did lots of things together. And he and Elaine Cherstead, who taught violin at Concordia, and I did a lot together. And I did almost all of Peg Kesey's accompanying.
Including studio or teaching?
No, not actually, just recital
just recitals,
work.
Yeah.
And, of course, while Peg was still singing, then she and I worked together.
You know, we talked about this just before we began the tape, and you said you were doing this while I was a student at Concordia, and it is coming, and I didn't remember this, it's coming back to me now. I do remember now that you were very much on the scene, and somehow or other, Concordia's three piano teachers when I was there, Borghild Torovic and Clara Dewey and then Paul Christensen, and none of the three of them did much playing.
No.
And so clearly you were a valuable asset on the musical scene. And you were, did you actually do MS and Concordia both during this period of time?
Not at the same time.
Not at the same time.
No, I...
You left the Concordia Conservatory.
Left Concordia and went to Morehead State.
I see. And how long were you associated with Morehead State?
Oh, close to 10 years.
And again, you were a member of the music department faculty then.
Right.
And your teaching responsibility was primarily piano, or exclusively piano?
Well, there were a few organ students, which I had to handle, though I wasn't really much interested in it or very well equipped to do it.
But nobody else was around?
No.
Yeah.
And there wasn't a real organ there, so it didn't make too much difference.
Okay. And after your teaching at Morehead State, then you retired from teaching, or did you continue?
Yeah, well, we left for Colorado.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. And then upon your return, did you resume your teaching again?
A little bit. Mm-hmm. Not. And that was purely private work.
I see. I see. My first acquaintance with you was as a superintendent of a Sunday school at First Congregational Church. I presume you were active in various community affairs, too, such as church affairs and that sort of thing.
Right, and, I was on the symphony board way back mm-hmm. when. Mm-hmm. Worked at the YWCA, and after we came back, I was involved with Volunteers for Community Service. Mm-hmm. Served on that board for a long time. And I was also on the board of the Community Action Council, the Clay Wilkin. And on the first board of the Great Plains Food Bank.
Mm-hmm. So, obviously, what happened is that you became more and more involved in various community service
yes.
activities.
Uh-huh. Right now, I'm involved in Pelican Rapids, too, and treasurer of the food shelf.
Is that right? Okay. About when did your activity begin in that kind of arena?
Well, the YWCA goes way, way back to when we were in Fargo.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, for example, this the volunteer service, what was it now?
I Volunteers for Community
yeah.
Service.
That's a relatively new organization, isn't it?
Well, yes, relatively new, but it's... I think it was maybe the second or third year that Margaret Reed was here
okay.
that she
Which
got that started.
Which would be in the late 60s, mm-hmm. I guess, something
right.
like that, yeah. As you look over that particular scene in this community, what kind of trends did you see? Were there any trends that you saw as far as this community... its needs, the agencies to meet those needs?
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, the needs increased all the time, and it took quite a while for the community to acknowledge that there were any needs. And I must say I remember an awful lot of turf protection and struggle within United Way to for money, power, I suppose, at
mm-hmm.
the same time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In other words, at least some of the community attitudes, could they be described as, well, we don't have those kind of problems.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
The best of all possible worlds was yeah. right here, and nobody...
Yeah.
was supposed to upset any apple carts.
Yeah, yeah. It was a very comfortable thing if you could keep mm-hmm. your head deep enough in the sand.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, when did you start getting involved in politics?
Well, actively in the 60s, but we were also involved in a way in Colorado
mm-hmm.
when we lived there, but not in any organized way. I started first thinking about it when I was in high school. We lived across the street from a perfectly marvelous man named Ballou. He was a Unitarian minister in Fargo. Had come from New England, of course, and he had two very good friends whom I was fortunate enough to meet because we lived across the street from him. That was Eugene Debs and Norman Thomas.
Is that right?
Right. And the
grand old men of socialism. Right.
And they spent, you know, some time in Fargo visiting Henry, and I would get a chance to go over there and sit in a corner and listen to them, and it was marvelous. So, you know, I was a thoroughgoing socialist to start with.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to hear about the first time I voted for president?
Yes.
I was in Battle Lake teaching. First year I was in Battle Lake. And I can't even remember what Republican was running, but I remember there were 4 votes for Roosevelt and a couple of hundred for whoever the Republican was. And there was 1 vote for Norman Thomas. And I was scared all year that somebody would find out who it was.
Well, I have a confession to make. The first 2 or 3 times that I voted, I was so disaffected with both major party candidates that I voted Norman Thomas just as a kind of protest. I could not, I was not a socialist, but nevertheless, I thought, well, this is a responsible person anyway, and I wasn't very pleased with what was happening. That's interesting. And what a privilege, really, to have met those two persons. Then you, as far as your political career, you started to get more active then in the 60s.
In the 60s,
mm-hmm.
right.
Mm-hmm. And you identified with what party?
With the Democratic Party.
Okay. And why?
Well, because it was the closest I could come to the Socialist Party had definitely changed by that time. It was no longer the party of Norman Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't interested in frittering away any time on what was a vain endeavor. We got heavily involved in the Democratic Farmer Labor Party.
Mm-hmm. And what appealed to you? You said they held to some of the same ideals that you had experienced.
Well, what appealed to me was that it seemed to me it was a party that was willing to do things for people who couldn't do things for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, your involvement, your first involvement, was as a what?
Well, a precinct caucus attendee.
Okay.
And we were from a country precinct or rural precinct, had no problems getting on, elected to go on to the county convention.
Sure.
And those were exciting days. At least in the DFL, you know, half the convention would disappear and go and meet someplace else and
have a rump session. Is that it?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And
what would the issue that would divide them, that cause them to?
Fair representation, let's say, or at least what they thought would be fair. It was before any of the so-called reforms had been taken, and the party was still operating on a winner-take-all basis, and
mm-hmm.
and. There were a lot of divisions.
And mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Democrats have always had a outstanding ability to be divisive,
right.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well, and the reforms have done nothing to get rid of that. In fact, they've increased mm-hmm. the chances to be divisive and ineffective.
What particular reforms are we talking about now?
Oh, I'm talking about things like the walking sub-caucus and proportional representation. I don't have any quarrel with proportional representation, but I do have a quarrel with a device like the walking sub-caucus, which is, you know, by its very nature divides the party and physically.
Yeah.
And doesn't make for good feelings all the way around.
Well, you started to attend county conventions.
Right.
And then what was your next role that you began to assume?
Well, within the party, Ray was doing far more than I was. But I was a member of the charter member of the DFL Feminist Caucus and Women's Political Caucus, and was, you know, involved on a state level, really, more than I was on the local level. You know, gradually got more and more involved locally. And in... I did work for Bob Berglund, and
okay, so you were a campaign worker, or did
right?
Were you a paid campaign worker, or were you a volunteer?
No, not until I ran Keith Langseth's first campaign.
That was okay.
First time I ever was paid for.
So Bob Berglund was the first particular candidate where you had some formal responsibilities,
right?
Now, he was a 7th District Congressman for how many terms?
Let's see, from not very long, from 70, can't remember when he was first elected, 70, I think. And then, of course, in 76, he moved out to
Secretary
of Agriculture. Secretary of Agriculture.
Yeah, yeah. Had the 7th District been served by a DFL congressman prior to Berglund?
Corey Knudsen.
Okay.
That was when it was still the 9th District before reapportionment.
Oh, I see. Well, Berglund, of course, became a national figure, and obviously you got to know him very well.
Very well.
Yeah. Do you still keep in touch with him?
Well, we run into each other and have a chance to talk every once in a while.
Yeah. What other national figures or figures of significance have you had contact with and that you have some memory
well,
of?
Well, Hubert Humphrey, of course. I've known the Mondales. I was a delegate to the first midterm conference of the Democratic Party in Kansas City back in 73, that must have been, 74, and had a chance to meet many national figures then. I remember talking with Avril Haverman and Claiborne Pell, Ed Muskie, and... that was a great experience, far better than attending a national convention, I'm sure.
You never did go as a national
delegate?
No,
never wanted to.
You thought that was kind of an exercise in futility?
Yes.
Did you? Okay. Let's go back to that feminist caucus. When was that?
Oh, I'm not really good on dates, but it got started sometime around 70, I would say.
Fairly early then, actually, right, as far as the feminist movement is concerned. Yeah.
In fact, it was started to work on this business of better representation of everybody in the party. And... by the time of that first midterm conference, had gotten a fair amount of shreds of power into its hands, and was really having an effect in Minnesota.
Was their role major as far as establishing the various expectations of equal representation as far as gender within?
Right.
Yeah. Which, as near as I can see, now I guess I can't really speak, but I was quite struck, let's put it that way, when I came here and became involved a little bit to see how rigidly that was applied. You mm-hmm. know, I mean, that was a party distinctive.
Right.
Yeah. And the Feminist Caucus had a major mm-hmm. role in that. Any other issues that they spoke out on that made an impact?
Well, certainly they were in the thick of the struggle over abortion, and still are, although the Feminist Caucus doesn't wield the same kind of power that it did then. It's mm-hmm. gotten more diffuse. And I have long since resigned from it, because mm-hmm. once it got itself involved in supporting an unendorsed candidate, I didn't want to have anything to do with it.
Mm-hmm. You obviously have strong feelings about party loyalty, then.
Yeah, I'm nothing but a Democrat now. I don't belong to any mm-hmm. splinter group within the party.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And why is that? Why that?
Well, I'm in politics to make a change, you know, to try to make things better than they were before. And if you don't win elections, you can't do that. And I see all this splinter activity as keeping us from losing elections mm-hmm. or from winning elections.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't have much many kind thoughts for
mm-hmm. for the Polly Mann type of
right.
Candidacy
or all the caucuses within the DFL. There's a Feminist Caucus, there's a Pro-Life Caucus, there's a Black Caucus, there's, you know, mm-hmm. the list is, mm-hmm. well, it's not endless, but it's way too long.
Yeah. That's interesting. It, how does your belief that party unity should be the ultimate goal, simply because that's the only way the party can be effective, I guess. That's
right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's the only way we can attract candidates that we really want to work for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, as you look back, clearly the Kansas City Conference is a very important and
that was a great experience.
Great experience. What are some of the other more interesting or vivid or memorable experiences as far as politics is concerned that you can recall?
Well, I was 7th District Associate Chair for two terms. Bob Irvin from Detroit Lakes was mm-hmm. chair at the time. That was a lot of fun, a lot of work, but it spanned the time when Bob Berglund was still congressman and when he wasn't. It was a lot more fun with an incumbent than it
yes.
has been since. Several state conventions were good experiences, and some were not such good experiences. There's always a certain amount of fun out of these political gatherings.
Mm-hmm.
That and well, I think, you know, we did make some important strides along the way, but that comes and goes too, ups
yes.
and downs.
Yes, and in the 7th District, it's gone pretty much.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
for quite a long while now.
Right.
Now you were particularly involved in Clay County for years. You're now in Lauderdale County, but
right.
Clay County was your bailiwick for a long time. As you look at Clay County party politics, what have been the trends during the last 20 years of your involvement, as you might identify them?
Well, to start with, Clay County was not much better than Otter Tail County when it came to nurturing Democrats. It was a heavily Republican county, still is a Republican county for the most part, but I think when the county party is able to maintain a presence, you know, countywide, if there are people working that their neighbors can see, it helps. While Ray was county chair, we elected Keith and Dave the first time that the Democrats had ever sent anybody to the Minnesota State Legislature.
Right? Both of them were firsts.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
And
now this is Keith Langseth and
Dave
Beauchamp.
Right.
To get him on the tape.
Okay. Right. And then, of course, they both served two terms and then were defeated in 78, the year that everything went down the tube. Somewhat the same sort of campaign that the Republicans ran this year, 88, and were able to defeat a lot of DFL incumbents, which didn't happen in 88, thank goodness. And then 2 years later, Keith came back and ran for the Senate, mm-hmm. and was successful. And now, in the next legislature, Clay will have three. All it can send to the
that's
state
right.
legislature.
So 100%.
That's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Some other interesting things that show what a working party can do is that when Warren Spanis ran for governor, Clay was one of the few counties that carried for Warren during the primary. It was one of the few counties that carried for one of the few rural counties out here that carried for Don Fraser when he ran for Senate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is possible for a party to carry for an endorsed candidate if only it does the work it's supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, both very good candidates, and I've forgotten now who. Is that what did Quay come in over Spanish?
Was no, Perpich in the primary.
Oh, this was the primary,
right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In Fraser's case, it was Short
running against him
in the primary again. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I mean, they both lost the primaries, but that's
as far
because
Clay County is concerned,
they won.
Yeah, they won. How about issues, local issues?
Well, I still think the important local issues in Clay County are economic. Abortion, of course, has played a big role in the ins and outs of party
mm-hmm.
politics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Can you see any trends as far as either one of those, economic issues, I presume agriculture. Is
right. The county is agricultural. Everything depends on it.
Yeah.
Obviously, things aren't bad enough yet for a real swing to the Democratic Party. That probably because Clay County has so many beet farmers who haven't been suffering to the extent that others have.
Mm-hmm. There's a certain irony there, isn't
yeah,
there?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the government subsidy that makes
mm-hmm.
them prosperous, and yet
sure.
they are not particularly supportive of government intervention in lots
mm-hmm.
of arenas. So I always look at that to the degree of as a something that's quite ironic. And the you think the abortion, the right to life caucus is that a continuing thing? You think has it showed any trends during the course of the?
Well, they were remarkably quiet during the 9A election this year, I would say. Possibly as a result of the Clute trouble,
they in other words, Diane, who probably would not have been their Diane Ray Williams,
no.
Who did.
No, if they had wanted to do something, they could have beat her.
Yeah, that mm-hmm. I just
you know that.
Yeah, I just really was amazed that mm-hmm. That did not seem to emerge, and
I mean, nationally, the movement seems to be gathering a sort of a second head of steam,
mm-hmm.
But I don't know really what's going on in Clay County.
Yeah. Well, we've covered, I guess, the three major areas of your career. Well, four, if you talk about English teaching, and then your musical teaching and performance, your community service, broadly defined, and then this political activity. My most vivid impressions of you on the political scene was here is someone who has done her homework and knows the answers of the various minutiae it takes to make something work.
Oh, obviously.
And you obviously did a lot of homework.
Right.
Persons with knowledge end up being influential in that. That was, I'm sure, your objective, to know and thus be able to influence the course of events.
Right. My whole training has been, you just prepare yourself as well as you possibly can to do whatever job is.
Well, are there anything aspects of your life that we ought to get on tape so that they're preserved?
I certainly can't think of anything.
Let's talk just a little bit about retirement, because obviously I'm not sure that the level of activity has changed any.
No,
it has your side of activity.
Ray is busier than he was before. He's on our township board, now chairman, and has been real active trying to get money from the state for a road in Otter Tail County, in our township.
Mm-hmm.
He spends a lot of time on that. He's also on the food shelf board.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not heavily involved in church activity. We're both on the church cabinet, but don't do a whole lot there. And we're busy enough, that's
mm-hmm.
for sure.
Still involved in DFL.
Right. I'm still on the State Central Committee.
Mm-hmm.
And and Ray and I are both on the County Executive Committee.
Mm-hmm. And we probably at least ought to get on tape that Ray is Ray Johnson, who was a longtime educator. I remember him as being on the faculty at South Junior High.
That's right.
Was that his career basically?
As far as Moorhead was
mm-hmm.
concerned.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But you are finding some time to do a few other things that are fun?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you have a home on a lake.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess we've covered
good
everything. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.